Good evening, I'm Paul Edwards, and welcome to Tuesday Topics. Tonight, we're going to be discussing a topic that ought to be of interest to a lot of blind folks, and that is, how are services delivered in their states? How are the organizations that deliver services to them governed? And what are the advantages and disadvantages of different approaches to the organization of, let's call them divisions of blind services as we do in Florida? There are a lot of models out there for the delivery of services for people who are blind, and many states have gone through many different iterations of service delivery, so that at some point services have been delivered to people who are blind by agencies which are not specifically blindness oriented, that is, by agencies that might be part of a larger vocational rehabilitation organization. Second, services are sometimes delivered by an agency that is specifically designated to serve blind folks and that is a part of state government. That is, will usually be a part of either the Department of Labor or the Department of Education, sometimes as well the Department of Social Services. And the third model that I think we need to identify is what's called a commission. That is a specifically organized appointed board who has the responsibility of overseeing the delivery of services in a state. And in some states there is a good deal of governmental control. In other states there is a kind of a private commission. And in still other states, the commission is far more a figurehead than they really are a governing body. So we have lots of different models to look at. And I think it might be good for us to perhaps go around and see how people would describe the kind of agency that they have in their state. So maybe we'll start with Brian in Massachusetts.
In Massachusetts, we have a Commission for the Blind, at least that's its title. It's actually a section of the Secretariat called the Human Services Secretariat. The governor appoints the Secretary of the Human Services Division, and then the Commission for the Blind in turn hires a commissioner to act as its head, typically on a five-year contract. In terms of consumer involvement, there are two levels of that. One, under federal statutes, we have a Rehabilitation Council, again, set up by the Rehabilitation Services Administration regulations as it applies to the provision of vocational rehabilitation. And the secondary group, called the Statutory Advisory Board, required by our state regulations associated with this particular agency. In both cases, the governor does the appointment of the members of the Rehab Council and the Statutory Advisory Board. There is no authority beyond advisory in terms of the Statutory Advisory Board, and the Rehab Council has mostly advisory capacities, though it does have to sign off on certain aspects of the state's functioning as a rehabilitation agency. I would say up to this point it's been pretty effective, has six regional offices, is no worse a bureaucracy than any other part of state government, and one of the nicest things about our agency is it has decided not to enter into what's called an order of selection, and therefore all individuals who need and desire services that are deemed appropriate by their vocational rehabilitation counselor can qualify to get them.
your entity is called a commission, but actually really has what amounts to an executive director and is not governed by a commission, which is usually defined as a few folks, some of whom are blind, who actually do the governing of the agency, yes?
Correct. And if we don't have anybody who comes from a state with a true commission form, I can talk about that a bit from my experience of serving as one of the commissioners on the Oregon Commission for the Blind Board of Commissioners.
I think a good contrast with Massachusetts might be California. And Dave McElroy is with us from California. And Dave, could you tell us a little bit about the history of services to blind folks in California over the last few years?
I'll do the best I can. First of all, my name is Dave McElroy, and I live in what you would call more of a hinterland of California than many. And I have not been as involved in this issue as something might, but I have a passing idea of programs. I've been in the social service field for 25 years myself, but not with the blind at all. So here goes. Basically, we have in California, first of all, we have the recent history is that we have very recently adopted it's actually a division of sensory services, basically, is what it's called. We in ACB of California and CCB had started by wanting a separate commission for the blind, and this is what we got. And basically, it doesn't work. Unfortunately, it is paper only. There is a manager of the division, but really, it has no. As a non-rehab person, I have seen no visible effect of the service to the blind. California, you have to realize, is a huge state. We are, I believe, in the continental U.S., second only to Texas. The distance between Northern and Southern California is pretty much the distance between, say, Miami and Washington, D.C. So you're talking about a large area, We have a mixture. In areas where I live, like where I live in kind of the ruralish area, only the Department of Vocational Rehabilitation is the service deliverer, if there is one. We have rehabilitation teachers very sparsely around who are deliver that kind of service as needed. As you go into the larger cities, you have private agencies. San Francisco has its Lighthouse. Los Angeles has its Braille Institute. Fresno has its Central Valley. I forgot what they call it now. It's just up the road, and I don't. These are private entities that provide services as they can. But it really is haphazard. Sacramento has the SAC Society for the Blind. It's another one that comes to mind. Bakersfield with the Kern County Braille Center, but all of these, there's no one place where one can go in California. We are very much segmented, and I don't know what else to really say other than that. As I said, I would have done a little bit of homework if I'd known and been prepared, but suffice it to say that the services are scattered at best, and it really depends in California where you are and what you have. I think we are in a process in this state right now of shrinkage in the state government. So I don't know what's going to happen.
I would add two or three things to what you said, and then I'll give you a chance to comment on them. One of the things is Brian raised the issue of order of selection. Order of selection is when the agency serving folks who are blind doesn't believe that it's going to have enough money to provide services to all the people who are going to request those services. And so what they do is they essentially write a set of rules that they will follow that will indicate who's going to be given priority in terms of services, since they're going to have to pick and choose who they serve. I define it now because California, in fact, is operating with orders of selection. in talking with and listening to the director of the rehab system in California when I was out there last fall, there doesn't seem to be any likelihood that the order of selection will go away soon. I think that, and Dave, this is the other thing that I'd like you to comment on, I think that there are two other things that are interesting about California. The first thing is that I think that it's probably too soon to judge whether some of the changes that have recently been implemented will in fact make a difference. One of the things that they did do was to create a managerial structure that enabled a much larger proportion of those individuals who were hired by the state of California who specifically served blind folks to in fact be managed in a separate or to a degree in a separate entity and trained in a separate entity rather than simply being part of a larger rehabilitation office. They still operate out of those offices, and exactly how that governance is going to work is, I think, still a question. But clearly, we're better off than we were where even though there were some specialist blind counselors, they were being supervised often by folks who had no notion of what blind people really needed, and hence services, as David has described them, were fairly scattered and not very appropriate. So there is an order of selection. I think it's too soon to know how much of an impact the specialization of services will take. And the other thing that I'd like you to comment on, Dave, a little bit is, the interesting thing about the California experience is that the ACB, the NFB, the American Foundation for the Blind, AER, virtually all of the private agencies got together in a large coalition and essentially spoke with one voice, and in the face of increasing generalization and shrinkage of state government in California, actually managed to get, at least to a degree, a theoretical breakout of services to blind folks into a separate managerial unit. Does that seem about right to you, Dave? And are there any other things you'd add to that?
No, I neglected to mention the order of selection. That has been the order of the day for a few years now. So yes, that's and no, I don't think that's going away soon. But yes, we did. I should have mentioned that we did. Every organization did speak with one voice. Definitely, absolutely we did. Had we not done that, I don't think we'd have gotten as far as we have. And I speak as a person who does not normally typically use services of the state at this point. And I would have to say that so far, as I said, from my standpoint, from the standpoint of small town California, there has yet been no definable change. I hope that changes in the future. I hope we do see an increase in services. But thus far, it's to my thinking, the changes that we've asked for have really not happened other than on paper. And I do hope that changes in time.
Well, I think probably if a lot of the states cut their budgets and things, I think that the blindness organizations are going to have to work together to preserve the services for blind people. I think that here in Michigan, my name is Gary Wood, and I live in Lansing, Michigan. But here in Michigan, they have a commission for the blind. Rather, it's the commissioners, I think, are appointed by the governor. There's about four or five commissioners, I believe that's the way it's been. And governor appoints them. I think there's some blind and some sighted. I believe they hold commission meetings once a month. I've been to a few of them. They've been quite meaningful, I think, to see them at work. Of course, years ago, up until the 80s, we had a services for the blind under the Department of Social Services, Division of Services for the Blind, and I think that there was some county governance there, then the state had more of a role later. I think that we we had better services that way. But then I think that the agencies for the blind pushed for the idea of a commission for the blind. I think that that's a better subset, because I think that commissions for the blind are more consumer oriented as opposed to just being a services for the blind. Although when they became a commission, it was a part of Department of Labor, and then it became a part of social services, but it was in Michigan we changed it to the Family Independence Agency.
Hello, this is Larry Turnbull from Orlando, Florida, and I used to live in Michigan until recently. I moved back to Florida in December of 2003, and when I was living in Michigan, it was known as the Commission for the Blind, at least up in northern Michigan where I was at, and I don't know a lot of... I think it was pretty much what Gary said. They were appointed by the governor and all that. And I found, anyway, that, you know, they weren't very helpful at all up in the northern part. There was a guy there that represented the northern part that was over in... I lived in Traverse City, and the guy that represented the northern region was over 2.5 hours, maybe 3 hours away in Gaylord. And... he seemed, I've asked him a lot of questions about job markets and, you know, about different services that were available, and he really didn't seem to know too much on what was there, but I do know for a fact that it was known as Michigan Commission for the Blind. The southern part of the state, Lansing, Detroit, and all that, seemed to have somewhat of better service from people that I've talked to. It's just pretty much, it was more of a geographical thing, I would suppose.
There is some argument, I suppose, for saying that you can't put a lot of personnel in places where there's relatively a sparse population. And I suspect that would apply to Dave McElroy as well. Michigan and California are both states that have had terrific financial problems over the last 3 or 4 years. And so one of the things that that services for the blind in both states have had to grapple with is mandatory cuts in budgets over the past several years. I think it's actually a tribute to our political clout that there really have been substantial efforts in terms of the cutbacks in California to, A, protect many of the people who delivered specialized services within the rehab system, and B, where possible, to restore positions that were authorized by the legislation but had never been filled because of the budgetary crisis in California. And very much the same kind of thing has happened in Michigan, where all elements of state government were required to actually cut their staff, as well as expecting less actual funding from the state government system. So both of those states are instances where, on the one hand, you may have had movements in good directions in terms of the governance, but the ability of those agencies to work well has been substantially impacted by the budgetary crises in both states. Anicio, you're from a different state, a smaller state, one which may have a different kind of service delivery model. Could you tell us a little bit about what goes on in Maine?
My name is Anicio Correa, and I do live in Maine. I've been here for just a little bit over 5 years. Maine is a smaller state in terms of population. We have about 1 million, I believe it's 1.2 million, last figure I saw. But it's a huge state in area. Someone told me sometime when I first moved here to Maine that you can put all the New England states all together, except Maine, and they all fit inside Maine, and there's quite a bit of room left. What that means, though, is that we have a huge space, relatively small population, and the vast majority of that population is concentrated in the southern part of the state. So I would think that our northern part of the state kind of experience is probably not very different than what Larry was talking about from the rural parts of Michigan. We have one state agency, which is the Division for the Blind and Visually Impaired. The division is a separate agency within the Bureau of Rehabilitation Services. There's a Bureau of Rehab Services that includes DBVI, or the Division for the Blind, and General VR. That Bureau of Rehab Services is housed in the Department of Labor. There's a commissioner, of course, of the Department of Labor that is appointed by the governor. We have a new one that started, I guess, a year and so ago when we had a new governor. That person then hires the director of the Bureau of Rehab Services. And then the head of the Division for the Blind is a civil service. I mean, that person is you know, he's been there since, I believe, late 80s or mid 80s. So even though we are within, you know, we are partners with General Rehab, we are a separate agency. We have a state rehab council, which is, I guess, mandated by the federal government under Title I. I happen to be the chair of that state rehab council right now. And our role is to monitor the division and provide advice. But we have a lot more clout than obviously often we take advantage of. We tend to be more advisors than take a more proactive action as a council. The division has vocational rehabilitation counselors that provide some job development, but actually not much. They do more paperwork stuff, and then they purchase job development, job placement, job coaching services from private community rehab providers, as they call them, not necessarily blindness specialized. There is a statewide private nonprofit blindness agency. That's where I work, the Iris Network, and we provide mostly rehabilitation teaching, adjustment counseling, and some mobility. Most of the orientation and mobility is provided by the state, by the Division for the Blind and Visually Impaired. I think Paul and Brian, you mentioned order of selection. We do not have that here with the Division for the Blind. The General VR does follow an order of selection. And lastly, we are one of the few states where legal blindness is really not the eligibility criterion. We follow in Maine more of a functional eligibility, which actually is a good thing.
Just before we move on to some other elements, maybe it would be good to see what some of our Floridians think about the structure and organization of services in the blind in Florida, because over the past few years, Florida has been an example of an entity that is going in a direction that is very much favored by the Republican federal government and by our Republican state government. And there are a number of things happening in Florida that I think could be instructive to some of the folks from other states. The Division of Blind Services is a separate agency for the blind, and we have actually had a separate agency over a very long history, in fact, since 1940. Interestingly enough, and confusingly enough, when the Agency for the Blind was formed in Florida, it was known as the Florida Council for the Blind, which has made for no end of confusion in terms of such things as bequests as regards the FCB. There has been lots of talk about where the Division of Blind Services ought to be. Currently, the Division of Blind Services has an executive director who is a civil service hire, and who is, in fact, hired under the Commission of Education, which is where the Division of Blind Services is housed. The Division of Vocational Rehabilitation is also housed there, but they are two separate agencies with separate budgets, with separate governance, and they do virtually nothing in common. They operate as entirely separate entities. Down the road, we'll talk about some of those things because I think that they might change. What I was referring to over the past few years that Florida has gone through is a period whereby it was legislatively mandated that services for the blind in Florida be privatized. And there was a huge flurry of activity over vocational rehabilitation, which actually attempted to be privatized and ended up being told by the federal government that its approach to privatization would in fact not be acceptable to Rehabilitative Services Administration, and they would therefore be tempted to cut off funding to vocational rehabilitation. Legislatively, the Division of Blind Services is still under a mandate to privatize, though we believe that a commission that would set the commission up as a governance body separate from the receiving funds through the Department of Education would actually be a model that would meet the privatization component, as well as providing what we think would probably be pretty effective oversight for services for the blind here in the state of Florida. So that's kind of a picture of what things are like here in Florida, as in many of the other states that we've heard from. There are really three substantial divisions of services. The rehabilitative area has a substantial amount of the money. And the other two major components are services to children and services to older folks. And both of those are a part of a funding process that must derive most of its dollars from the state legislature, because there really aren't a lot of federal dollars except for the stuff that Anicio described that are out there to provide services to older folks. So, okay, I think that we've got a pretty clear notion of how the states that are here are in fact being supervised and being governed. We're actually fortunate to have a couple of folks who are directly involved in rehabilitation councils. And in fact, I think we have two chairs. If Brian is not now the chair, he certainly was.
Yeah, I was chair of the Massachusetts Rehab Council for 8 years. I just stepped down about 6 months ago or so. And there was a dramatic improvement in its authority and the manner in which its advice was accepted and implemented over time. When we became a rehabilitation council rather than a rehabilitation advisory council, we got a bit more teeth in the process, and were successful at making recommendations for changes in policies in terms of what kind of services a college student would be able to receive, what kind of services you would receive in preparation for looking for work, as opposed to the kinds of services you would get once you got a job, what kind of services you would get in terms of preparing resumes and learning interview techniques and those kinds of things. All of those, I think, we had a very positive impact on. We also did a fair amount of advocacy. When ACB put out its 13 points, we were successful at getting our agency to adopt those. When ACB objected to the elimination of Homemaker as a VR goal, we were successful getting our agency to come out against that policy. When industries programs, though the workers in industries were no longer allowed to be counted, we headed the charge there and got our agency to support us in that. So I think we were quite effective as a voice of the people, so to speak.
Let's talk for a minute about Maine's Rehab Council. We're fortunate to have Anicio, who is its chair.
What comes to mind in terms of statute, what we are required to do or expected to do is to want to ensure that the division is fulfilling its mission, that they're rules and procedures and rules and regulations are that we have not only give them a stamp of approval, but actually are involved in their development and promulgation. We are involved in the not so much in the implementation, but in the assessment of results obtained from the consumer satisfaction survey that the division conducts every year. We are involved. In fact, we're doing that right now this year in the development of a statewide needs assessment that the division, the state agency, needs to implement every 3 years. But I don't know of anything else except to say that we have one person on the council that I rely on a lot for advice on what it is that our role is, because she's a federal employee, first of all, so she has sort of a great deal of immunity within the council, because first of all, she's not elected, she has a seat, permanent seat, as the member of the client assistance program. And she really is not, because she's not a representative of a rehabilitation facility like I am, she really is in a good position to advocate. So, I use her a lot. Anyway, she constantly reminds us that we are not there just to advise, but we are there to advise, yes, but also to be part of the development of policies and really take a active role in that. We're trying to do that more and more. I mean, we have an annual training session. We meet every 2 months, 6 times a year. And in addition to that, we have a training session, a 2-day session, kind of retreat in the summer where we do a lot of retreat types of things, but also training on what the what our roles are, role is, etc. I understand now that the regional offices from RSA, which is kind of interesting, since hopefully we'll talk about that in a little while about some of the proposals for those regional offices of RSA, but they have recently initiated a process of actually providing workshops for our SRCs and designated state units to talk about their roles and that kind of stuff. So that hopefully that some material will come out of that as well, that will help the SRCs assume an even more important role within the structure of the service delivery system.
The other point that we probably should touch on for just a second, since it came up, is in every state now, in addition to having vocational rehabilitation, developmental disability services, blind services, there is also what is called the client assistance program, what Anicio called the CAP program. And it's important to understand that the CAP program is a built-in way for consumers who are dissatisfied with services and who have exhausted all of their claims, can at least raise issues with regard to whether those services were delivered effectively and appropriately. And I don't think enough clients know that CAP programs are there and that they can really represent an ultimate review or appeal process that goes beyond even the executive director of the agency that's providing services to blind folks.
This is Debbie Grubb from Bradenton, Florida, and I have a couple of questions that I'd like to address to any of the people here who know. I'm just curious as to what you think the resignation of Joanne Wilson, what that has to, how that's going to impact RSA, and how that's going to impact the reauthorization of the Rehabilitation Act, and what it means for separate services for blind people and rehab services in general.
I do think that it was unfortunate for a commissioner to resign at this time, because there are such pressures years to reduce the size and significance of the Rehabilitation Services Administration, as demonstrated by the Executive Department calling for the reduction of RSA staff, 56 positions to be eliminated, which is virtually all of the positions in all of the regional offices of RSA. That's a pretty strong signal from the current administration that Rehabilitation Services as a separate entity, its days are numbered. And then to have the commissioner resign on top of that, though I can't say as I would blame somebody under those circumstances for doing that, will probably result in having that position reduced to a standard civil service job, one step closer toward melding RSA into the Department of Labor, similar to what's to some degree going up in Maine, I believe, where the Maine agency's regional offices are co-located at offices of the State Office on Unemployment or something along those lines.
Obviously, the Rehabilitative Services Administration is a fairly complex federal body that has responsibilities that extend beyond serving folks who are blind. They also serve other disability groups and have oversight not only over vocational rehabilitation, but also over independent living centers. The Rehabilitation Act actually governs both of those elements. RSA has virtually no say in what happens at One Stops, which of course is a serious issue. In addition to implementing regulations and the Rehabilitation Act, the RSA has been essentially what state government and the federal Department of Education as well have been to educational issues, because essentially what RSA's responsibility is to go into each state on a regular basis and audit their service delivery model and then measure that against the standards that are built into law and the regulations, make recommendations for change, provide technical assistance, in general, act as, in a very real sense, the protector of quality services throughout the country. With these huge cuts, one of the issues is RSA going to have the staff that it needs to be able to conduct these really important training elements all around the country that and monitoring efforts that occur all around the country that eventually lead to A, better services, B, better organized agencies, and C, an opportunity for an individual consumer to go beyond both the complaints to let's say a Division of Blind Services, but also even a complaint to the governor. Regardless of how this is presented, if the issue is not resolved, then any consumer has the right to ask the regional RSA office to at least look at the issue. And of course, one of the things that concerns everyone is with this huge staff reduction and the, in effect, the promise that within a very short period of time, all voc rehab services would be centralized. Many of the outlying offices would be closed. More importantly, virtually all, if not all, of the regional offices of RSA, because of these cost reductions, are in the process of closing down now. And that's going to mean that in the various regions that RSA had regional offices, the monitoring and supervision to ensure that the services that are delivered to blind folks within the state system are appropriate and effective. So they play a huge role, which may be about to go away.
Well, I don't know. If they decentralized too much, then they could hurt us, but I don't know. I mean, it's going to be something to think about. I think a lot of people have been quite cynical about the effectiveness of the administrator, Joanne Wilson. I mean, she's been controversial for I don't know how long, but I imagine a lot of the blind population are glad that she resigned, but I don't know. What does anybody think?
Well, I guess as someone who's not a member of NFP or ACB, I'm one of those people on the fence that is constantly saying, well, you know, I'm not a member of one or the other. I go to both conventions and I work with both of them, and I do here in the state, at least on the state level. I think and Paul, let me tell me if I'm totally out of order, and hopefully you'll be able to interrupt me, or if you can't later interrupt me, just send me a text message and I'll stop. But I think that Joanne Wilson is probably the third person commissioner who comes to the job with a specific philosophy that is that is an NFP philosophy. And I think one of my frustrations has been, and I as a member of the blindness service delivery community, you know, and I'm a member of AER, and I'm supposedly a professional, and I have a degree and all that kind of thing. So I'm aware of some of the issues that she brings to the plate. I think one of the problems is that we as a field, and as a professional field, one, and two, as a blindness community of perhaps a different philosophy, we have not been aggressive enough, as NFP has, in advancing potential candidates. And Paul, you probably, I mean, as a member of an organized blind consumer group, you probably can speak a lot more to this, and probably even tell me that yes, you have advanced. Because you know, other groups have advanced other people that have not been able have not been appointed yet. But I think that's the best way to, from my point of view, to address the issues, to really advance candidates that would have similar goals and objectives as we do, both as professionals, members of AER, members of various professions, and or members of the organized blindness consumer groups.
Well, this is Debbie Grubb again from Bradenton, Florida, and I have had disagreements with Ms. Wilson on guide dog issues and other things, but I think that the issue is bigger than whether we agree with Joanne Wilson on all of her philosophical decisions and views. I think that the fact that she has resigned and there may not be another RSA commissioner is very significant. I think that the closing of these regional offices I think it's going to cut down on the importance of rehabilitation services and basic services for independent living for people who are blind and visually impaired. We've talked about how bad services are now. Think of how they'll be without the supervision of the regional offices. I think blind people have a lot to be proud of, and that we have had commissioners of RSA who are blind or visually impaired, and I think that's an important thing. And if we had commissioners, it was my hope that the American Council of the Blind could put someone forward for the position when it came open again. So I think that it's a lot bigger issue than philosophy and whether she's a member of the National Federation of the Blind. I think that we are in for some significant trouble, and services that none of us have been particularly proud of or pleased with, from what I've heard here in this discussion today, I think can only get worse. And I think that we, as whether we are a member of ACB or NFB, I think it comes time when we need to speak with one voice and protect the services that we have come to depend on and that are ours by right under the Rehab Act.
Yeah, I think that's true too. I think we need to speak with one voice. And I mean, if blind rehabilitation is at stake, I mean, the future of it is at stake, then I think that all the blind consumer organizations should speak with one voice and say that this is not what we want.
Well, for fun, let me, and perhaps not only for fun, let me play the devil's advocate and talk perhaps somewhat like some of the folks in the current administration. what they would say is vocational rehabilitation has been around in one form or another since the early 1920s. In 1973, with the passage of the Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act, and more particularly after 1990, with the passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act, we ought to be seeing a substantial increase in the employment of people with disabilities, and we're not. In vocational rehabilitation systems, the placement rate over the last 12 to 14 years has not been significantly better. The unemployment rate among people with disabilities remains at 70%, and while a few people have challenged those statistics, the polls certainly seem to point to them. What many people are saying at the federal level, and in good and happy Republican circles, is we've told you year after year through the General Accounting Office how badly we think you're doing, and we've told you to seek to improve your services, and essentially you haven't. So perhaps it's time to completely do away with voc rehab altogether, not because a nice community agency would be better, but simply because RSA and a service delivery using their dollars simply doesn't seem to be producing results. So perhaps 4 or 5 years from now, what we will be faced with is folks who say, okay, you don't provide effective services because the outcome that you're striving for is employment, and that's not happening. So why are we pumping billions of dollars into a system that doesn't work? Let's do away with it, center services in one stops, and it's not going to matter if blind people can't get served there because folks don't know how. The reality is that I think this administration is perfectly prepared and capable throwing the baby out along with the bathwater. So those are at least some thoughts from another perspective that we might perhaps discuss.
This is Debbie Grubb from Bradenton, Florida. And what I wanted to say about that is that many of the jobs that blind people used to do, just as many of the jobs that other people used to do, are being phased out due to automation. And we all know that. So instead of saying that the employment remains the same, in a way it's a victory that it has remained the same, considering that many of the jobs that blind people used to do no longer exist or can be done more cheaply via automation or in another country. And I think the idea of being moral and in this country can possibly live. And we know that blind people, being a low instance minority, being a sensory impairment rather than a mobility impairment, that they are least understood, that it takes specially trained people to teach them, to reach out to them, to make them aware of skills. And I think that this administration has a moral imperative to do the right thing and to enable people who are blind and visually impaired. And the fact that there's still 70% unemployment among blind people isn't a sign that the system isn't working. It's a sign that the system isn't good enough, and making it less good is reprehensible.
Well, it is an abysmal rate of unemployment in blind people. I think maybe they need to try to do a better job of lowering the unemployment rate of blind people.
One of the things that certainly has been proposed, and I think Brian and Anisio both at least to some degree alluded to it, in looking at why a larger proportion of blind people actually don't retain employment, what appears to be coming out is that it has nothing to do with the ability of a blind person to do the job for which he's hired. It has a lot more to do with the degree to which he can adjust to the environment in which he has to work. And what both Brian and Anisio were saying, I think, was that one of the things that RSA was beginning to look at was the development and implementation of rules that would allow the delivery of more comprehensive services to clients earlier on in the process, so that they wouldn't have so many initial fatal placements that aren't based on their ability to do job, but rather on their ability to adjust to employment period. Okay, I think we've had a lively discussion. We probably haven't covered as much as we would have liked to, but perhaps we've set a framework so that people will at least understand better some of the options that are around in the States for the operation of vocational rehabilitation systems, as well as some of the other ways that services to blind folks are delivered in various states, some of the pros and cons of some of the current changes, as well as some of the pros and cons of the various approaches to governing agencies and what they mean for service delivery. I think this has been a good discussion. I think there's an awful lot of food for thought here, and we will determine after this program is over where we're going to go from here. So let me ask folks if there's a last comment they would want to make.
Paul, this is Anisio. I want to thank you for leading the discussion. I think this is it's an important discussion, and I'm hoping that we may be able to use this forum or a similar forum to this, where we'll be able to have an ongoing discussion about these issues that and these changes that are imminent and that will have such an impact on the way we provide services. It would be nice to have a place where we could get together and strategize and develop advocacy strategies to address these issues.
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea there, Nisho. I think that we're living in a changing world, and there are going to have to be new approaches taken, I think, probably, to deal with the issues of rehabilitation or mind services and everything to do with from job placement and rehabilitation and help for senior blind too. But I guess we just got to look at that. One thing I like about these two, the topics, it provides us a roadmap of where we go from here. It's not where we've been, but where do we go?
This is Debbie Grubb again from Bradenton, Florida, and I guess what I'd like to urge people to do is say that you have representatives in the United States Congress. Soon ACB will be making its trip up on the Hill, and I'm sure this subject will be raised. And I guess what I would urge everybody to do is to call and write your representatives and explain to them how important RSA is to us, how important the regional offices are, and why they're needed, and state your views eloquently and make it clear, because what we know in Congress is that most times they never get phone calls, and even more rarely than that do they get letters. So letters and phone calls going up on the Hill, whether you make it to the Washington offices or to the local offices, carry a great deal of weight. So if this initiative issue is important to you, do something about it. Raise your voice and urge your ACB chapters to do the same thing.
I think that's a very good point, Debbie. If rehabilitation is to be saved, then I think it's clearly going to be disabled consumers who are going to have the task of attempting to save it. I certainly can't speak for all disability advocates and wouldn't presume to do so. What I will say is there are a lot of organizations, and the ACB is one of them, who have reached out to places like RSA and made it clear that we would like the opportunity to work with them to develop the kind of proactive system we're talking about. And that essentially just hasn't happened. And I think that that is a major concern. This evening on Tuesday Topics, we've at least begun the process of looking at how agencies for the blind at the state level operate and are governed. I appreciate all who took part in our discussion tonight. Would once again like to thank Rachel and Larry in Orlando, Florida, for their work in recording Tuesday Topics this evening. I'd like to again thank Dave Williams for his work in editing these ramblings into a coherent program. And lastly, obviously I'd like to thank George Fies and the talking community, but I'd like to thank all of you who both joined the discussion and who listen on ACB Radio. You are what makes this program important, and on behalf of those who were here this evening, this is Paul Edwards saying thanks for tuning in and good night. In our last Tuesday topics, we began to discuss the complicated subject of how services are delivered to people who are blind in various states. What are the good things and the bad things about various approaches that are taken to service delivery? Next week, we're going to continue that discussion. We're going to explore whether a commissioner or commission is better than a general agency. We're going to discuss what consumer organizations can do to improve services in their state and what we as ACB can do at the national level to try to assure that the kind of services that blind people get are appropriate and effective. Please join us next week on Tuesday Topics to discuss these very important issues, and come to the chat room on Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern so that you can also be a part of the solution to our problems.